Good evening, everybody. Thank you very much for being here. Let me say that again. We are really, really glad that you're here and always so thankful to have you with us so that we can worship and study together. We say that at every service, but I want you to know it's not out of habit. We really, really mean it. We're glad that you're here. Of course, we know that being here is an awesome privilege. It is, in some ways, a responsibility for us as Christians and members of this congregation. It's a blessing. It's also a big, big encouragement. Not everyone feels as strongly about coming to these services like we do. And I really wish that people would understand more clearly that you being here is an encouragement to us. I knew a guy a long time ago who he kind of fancied himself a bit of a super Christian, you know. And he would say about Wednesday night, Sunday night services, even the occasional Sunday morning Bible class, he would say, you know, I just really don't need that. Some people need more. And he kind of fancied himself as a dude who didn't need as much, you know. And I tried and tried and tried in my sneaky preacher way to let him know it's not about that, you know. First of all, I didn't believe that he was a super Christian. In fact, I knew he was not a super Christian. But just beside that point, assuming that he was right in what he was saying, I tried to let him know, look, you being here is an encouragement. You know, don't think of it as coming here for yourself. Think of it as coming here for somebody else who's encouraged by your attendance. So, I want to let you know tonight I'm encouraged by your attendance. I also want to let you know tonight that my family wishes you and yours a very, very Merry Christmas a week early. We're going to be here for Christmas next Sunday, good Lord willing. But I want you to know that we hope that you have a great holiday season. It's a neat time of year. For Christians, it's also kind of an interesting time of year for true New Testament Christians, I'm talking about, because, you know, we are as convinced as we can be that Jesus was certainly, verifiably not born this time of year, not even close, really. And yet, this time of year is one where a lot of people who otherwise would not think about church or religion do think about church and religion, and that's kind of a neat thing. It's a very neat thing. I hope that you'll take advantage of the opportunities that this season brings to talk to people about the church, invite them to be with us next Sunday for all of our regular worship services, Bible study at 9:30, worship at 10:30 and 6. I hope that maybe we can find somebody who's interested this time of year. Otherwise, they might not be interested if it was another time of year. So let's see if we can't take advantage of this interesting time and this unique opportunity to invite someone to come and to be with us so that we can study together, learn together from God's Word. I already know what I'm going to be preaching next Sunday morning. It is going to be the greatest gift of all. That's the sermon. It's not going to be the greatest gift. It's going to be about the greatest gift. So I hope that you will definitely you make your plans to be here and also invite someone or a few someones to be here with us as well. I want to ask you another question tonight. What comes to mind? What do you think about when I mention the names Nadab and Abihu? Nadab and Abihu, they were brothers. And they were actually sons of Aaron the high priest. So they were good boys, raised in a wonderful home, we would presume. And in our text tonight, Leviticus chapter 10, we find Nadab and Abihu doing something that they had probably done numerous, numerous times before. In fact, if you know very much about the Old Testament practice and ritual involved in it, you would probably agree with me that it wouldn't be a stretch to say that Nadab and Abihu had done something like we see them doing here hundreds of times before. hundreds of times. The law of Moses required so many burnt offerings to be made to the Lord. And that's what Nadab and Abihu are doing right here in Leviticus chapter 10. Only this time would be unlike any other time. They're doing something that they have done many, many, many times before, but this time would be altogether different. Read with me Leviticus chapter 10, verse 1, and let's notice why. Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, each took his censer and put fire in it, put incense on it, and offered what the Bible calls strange fire. Strange fire, unauthorized fire, profane fire. I'm reading from the New King James Version tonight. It uses the word profane here. But we get the gist, right? This is fire that God had not specified. This was a big, big problem. And you see just how big of a problem it is as we read on. Nadab and Abihu are worshiping God. That's a universally accepted good thing to do, right? They're worshiping God, only they're making some mistakes along the way. And these are big deals that we're going to highlight as we dig a little deeper into this text. They offered strange fire, profane fire, unauthorized fire, all means the same thing, before the Lord, which he had not commanded. So there's the kicker there. The thing to hone in on is that fact that Nadab and Abihu, as well-intentioned as they might be, as sincere as they might be, I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but as sincere and as well-intentioned as they might be, as noble as their cause might have been, as pure as their motives might have been, Nadab and Abihu stepped out of the lane that God wanted them to be in. Nadab and Abihu did something that the Lord did not command them. And as you know from a study of our God in both the Old and the New Testaments, God always requires punishment for actions like this. And so punishment is coming to Nadab and Abihu. There went out fire from the Lord, and it devoured them. Leviticus 10, verse 2 says, and they died there before the Lord. And Moses said to Aaron, this is what the Lord spoke, saying, those who come near me must regard me as holy. I must be glorified. And interestingly, Aaron, the father of these two boys, held his peace. Nadab and Abihu, and what we see them doing here, teaches us so many lessons that can make for a better today, make for a better tomorrow for us. It can help us be better Christians. So let's take a closer look at this. I just want to point out two things tonight. Number one, their sin. Number two, its lessons. Let's take a closer look at what they did and see the things that we can learn from it. Well, as we pointed out from reading these pair of opening verses, they got together for the purpose of worshiping God. They were not wanting to disrespect God. Presumably, people who want to disrespect God or curse God don't go through the efforts of worshiping Him. And even though Nadab and Abihu got it all wrong, they had the kernel of a pure motive. You know, they meant to give something to God. It reminds me a little bit of Saul in 1 Samuel chapter 15. We talked a bit about the kings of Israel this morning, and I got the helpful reminder that Saul was the first of this nation's kings. He was selected by the people, their first king. And we see him in action in 1 Samuel chapter 15, in which Samuel the prophet tells him to go and utterly wipe out all of the inhabitants of this city. Everything was to go. It's admittedly a harsh instruction. It's It's one of those things that maybe Saul didn't quite understand why God wanted it to be that way. But as far as processing the command itself, listen, that wasn't hard. It was easy for Saul to understand what God was telling him to do. And that's the thing. We understand what God says, and sometimes where we mess up is by asking why. Well, why does God want this? And we kind of get in our own way, as I think we find Saul doing here. So Saul goes into the city, and he ad-libs. He edits God's instructions, and he makes some plans. He doesn't completely destroy all of the inhabitants of the land. He doesn't completely slaughter all of the animals. And when the prophet Samuel comes to meet him, Saul gleefully announces, "I have kept the commandments of the Lord." He's a man who's either mistaken or he's trying to pull the wool, no pun intended, over the prophet's eyes. Something's going on here, because what is very plain is that what Saul did not match what God told him to do. And yet, listen to the man, listen to Saul. Saul has big plans. You know, he has a reason why he didn't do what God told him to do. He's talking to the prophet Samuel. Like a lot of people talk to preachers and elders today. "Yeah, but," he says, I have this idea, and I think this is going to be better than the original version. Saul explains to Samuel, "We're going to take these animals that we didn't kill in obedience to God's commandment, and we're going to offer worship to him. And this is going to be great." So he thinks that he can impress God by disobeying God. It's kind of a bizarre thing that his mind is doing. Samuel, the prophet, lets him know very decisively in 1 Samuel 15, verses 22 through 29, to obey is better than to sacrifice. In other words, the lesson that needed to be learned that day was, "Hey, buddy, how about just do what God said do?" And the lesson that needs to be learned this day that Nadab and Abihu wake up to worship God is, "Hey, how about just do what God said do?" You may not completely understand it. You might not even really like it, you know. There are some things that God tells us to do that, quite honestly, if we were in charge, if we were God, we might do them differently, you know, but we're not God. And so that means we have to follow God. But in both of these instances, Nadab and Abihu, Leviticus chapter 10, Saul and the people, 1 Samuel chapter 15, we have people who are efforting to worship God. He's not staying in bed in the morning. Nadab and Abihu aren't staying in bed in the morning. They're up. They're worshiping God. Only they're not as focused as they need to be. They offered strange, unauthorized, foreign fire, which the Lord had not commanded. Later on in 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 1, we mentioned this verse earlier in the morning worship hour. 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 1, the Bible lets us know that Solomon loved many strange women. That's not a commentary on Solomon's taste in women, necessarily. That is letting us know that Solomon loved and was drawn to unauthorized women. God had marriage laws for his people. And Solomon broke those marriage laws. And one of the reasons why he did so is because he liked what God told him he shouldn't like. And in marrying these folks, he disobeyed God's clear commands. Well, in offering this fire for this offering to God, Nadab and Abihu clearly disobeyed God's commands. In Exodus chapter 30, verse 9, Exodus chapter 30, verse 9, God gives this instruction: ye shall offer no strange incense, nor burnt sacrifice, nor meat offering. So whatever was to be given to God in worship was to conform to His will. Now I can only imagine, right? You can too. After all, Nadab and Abihu, many years separated from us, they're still people like us. You know, we know the type. And the type is Nadab and Abihu thought, hey, it doesn't matter, right? What difference does it make? How contemporary. What difference does it make? I mean, that had to be on their mind here. They had to see one fire as just as good as another fire, right? Well, what else would compel them to act so carelessly? They had to think that this was not a big deal to God. Well, they learned the lesson that it was a big deal to God. God is serious about this. And we also learn that in coming to God, they did so in a way that didn't meet the occasion. You know, God says after this deed had been done, after fire came down and showed God's disapproval of Nadab and Abihu, God said, I will be regarded as holy. I will be glorified, He says. Possibly indicating to us that on top of everything else, Nadab and Abihu showed a lack of respect, a lack of reverence in the way that they approached God. And God is so good to us, you know. He is generous to us daily. There are things that He gives us that we take for granted. You know, the air that we're breathing right now, the sun that we all expect to wake up to tomorrow. These things are magnificent gifts from God. And sometimes in the familiarity of it all, we just kind of lose track of the fact that God is the generous and gracious giver of all of these things. And as such, we should be thankful and reverent when we approach Him. We don't worship God every day. Worshiping God is a special thing. God wants this worship to conform to His standards. And so when we do it, man, it's a special thing. It's not special because who the preacher is or who the song leader is or what's going on to make the service special. That's not what makes a worship service special. What makes a worship service special is the simple fact that we're approaching God. We're giving Him what He wants, and when we do this, man, it is worth taking a few minutes to get ourselves ready. It's worth preparing ourselves. I think Nadab and Abihu this day, when they rolled out of bed, they didn't quite prepare themselves for the worship. They approach this in a dangerously flippant and common way. And I want us to learn a lesson from that mistake that they made. They did not separate the Lord in their minds. You know, it's been said for a long, long, long time, and maybe it's become a bit trite because of that. But, you know, when somebody at the beginning of a worship service talks about taking a moment and separating our thoughts that are kind of buzzing around. This is a busy time of year. I know that, you know that, everybody knows that. This is a busy time of year, and it's hard to turn that off. You know, it's hard to turn that off, especially when we walk around with with these gadgets here that give us notifications of things that we need to look at and attend to. And, oh, I just got an email and somebody just sent me a message. And it's hard. It's hard to separate and kind of turn that off. But I want to encourage you tonight, that's exactly what we need to do when we get ourselves ready to approach God. And I want to suggest to you this evening that Nadab and Abihu probably didn't have that going for them in the way that they should have. We've taken a look at what they did, right? And what they did is, by many accounts, a pretty insignificant thing, right? If we were to evaluate Nadab and Abihu, we would quite possibly give them a pass. I mean, they're worshiping God. They're doing a lot of what He says. They're taking their incense. They're offering their sacrifices on it. They're getting the fire. They're making sure that they're all ready for this. They've done this many times before, right? And by our loose standards, we might look at this and say, no big deal. Definitely people who are left-wing members of the Church of Christ, the liberal element in Churches of Christ, would say, hey, this is no big deal. I mean, this is not a problem at all. Their heart's right. Well, God teaches us a powerful lesson to the contrary. God teaches us that it does matter what we do, that we can only offer what the Lord commands. We learn an important lesson here about how the Bible teaches us. You know, nowhere in the Old Testament will you find "thou shalt not use unauthorized fire." Nowhere will you find that. So we could say, in fact, if we were in a hermeneutics course, we would say that the Bible is silent on that point. The Bible is silent about what fire was to be offered to God. The Bible doesn't say, don't do this, don't do that, don't do that either. But that silence is not permission, you see. Nadab and Abihu did not have to be told every fire they could not use, because we know, because God is a just God, we know that God instructed Nadab and Abihu about which fire to use. We could rewind to Genesis chapter 4, where we have Cain and Abel worshiping God. And we know, because we know God, that God told those boys how to worship Him. God told Cain and Abel both how to worship. One decided that he was going to ad lib and change God's plan. He decided that he would make additions to what God said. Change it up just a little bit. God will still be okay with this. Right? Wrong. Cain learned a very important lesson, that God means what He says. And the fact that God did not say something doesn't give you a pass to run right through. Nadab and Abihu teach us that ever-important lesson about silence tonight as well. It doesn't matter that God did not say, thou shalt not use this kind of fire. It matters what God did say. That's the way the Bible teaches. That's the way the Bible instructs. So we're learning that we have to give God exactly what He wants. We're learning that obedience is a measure of our love for Him. The way we regard what God has told us to do is a tell. It's a sign of how much we love God. You remember years later from this point in Leviticus chapter 10, that is, Jesus would come and he would say very definitively, if you love me, just put a lot of heart into it. Is that what Jesus said? No, it's not. If you love me, make sure everyone has a good time in worship service. Is that what Jesus said? No, it's not. If you love me, Jesus says, keep my commandments. John 14, verse 15. And he still means that. I mean, that is a big, big lesson that we get from Nadab and Abihu. We learn that God absolutely must be respected. His words could not be more clear. Leviticus chapter 10, verse 3, God says, I must be regarded as holy. I must be glorified. Plain and simple truth is God is not going to take second place. He's not going to take second place. Moses was given the Ten Commandments from God, and at the central point of those Ten Commandments was the fact that God is a jealous God. That's why there are to be no gods in front of him. That's why there is to be no delay in obedience. That's why there is to be no almost kind of did everything I was told to do. No, it can't be that way. It can't be that way. You know why? Because God must be regarded as holy. God must be glorified. That's the way it has to be. That's the way it has to be. We have to give God that. Now, he's not going to force us. He's not going to constrain us. As we talked before, God has made us with the ability to choose for ourselves what we're going to do. God is not going to force us. He's not going to make us do anything. Preachers, elders, parents, they can't force us. They can't make us do anything. The fact is, the decision is ours to make. But one day, God will make sure that we glorify Him. The Bible talks about one day when Jesus comes, every knee will bow, every tongue shall confess. We're going to acknowledge one way or another that Jesus is supreme. We're going to acknowledge this. And the hope is that we do that before it's too late. Certainly our hope here is that you do that and instruct your families to do that before it's too late. But one way, one day, some way, somehow, you're going to acknowledge Jesus as God's Son. You're going to turn into the best preacher ever one day, because every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. One day you're going to preach the best sermon ever preached. That's when Jesus comes again. I hope on that day it won't be too little too late. I hope on that day we will gladly acknowledge, joyfully acknowledge the Lordship of our Savior, and we will have lived a life that is acceptable and pleasing in His sight. We're not talking about being perfect, but we are talking about being faithful. Nadab and Abihu teach us a lesson about being faithful to God, being devoted, being committed, being careful in our obedience to Him. Tonight, you can learn from that lesson by obeying the plan of salvation if you have a need this evening. If you haven't yet already heard, believed, repented, confessed, and been baptized, I want to make very clear that's what you must do in order to be saved. If you're ready, we're definitely ready for you. If you would like just to talk more about that, we're friendly here at the Augusta Road Church. We would love to talk with you more about that too. If you have already heard, believed, repented, confessed, and been baptized, that's great. Know this and learn it from Nadab and Abihu tonight. There's so much more. There's so much more. We need to make sure that we please God regularly. And if you have not been doing that, let us help you this evening. We invite you to come while we stand and sing, won't you please?
Thank you for listening to the Augusta Road Church of Christ. Located in Greenville, South Carolina, the Augusta Road congregation worships God in spirit and in truth in a friendly and loving environment. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for Augusta Road COC. And if you're ever in Greenville, South Carolina, we would love for you to come by for a visit.